Hello everyone and welcome to What a Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. Really sorry we haven't actually sat down to record anything in recent weeks. Just been busy here at 90 Min Towers. Joining me today, Sean Walsh, is just one person, just you, Jude Summerfield, here at 90 Min Towers.
Yeah, and it's a flesh meeting as well. It's an in-the-flesh meeting.
I haven't had one of those in a while.
Which is, not
with you since before the pandemic.
Not with you, mate. Not with you. Not since pre-pandemic, yeah. So lovely to chat coys in real life, IRL.
Yeah, quite a bit has happened since we last even talked about it, really.
Yeah, quite a lot. I feel like the last time we recorded, we would have been quite upbeat and happy and feeling like everything was in our hands, so to speak. It's sort of wobbled off a little bit.
Just a little
but
bit.
But we're starting to get there again now.
Yeah, I think I was saying to you earlier that it felt like after the Aston Villa win, I was pretty confident that we were at top four, that was ours to really lose, because I just thought Arsenal's games in hand were really tough. I thought I backed us to get maximum points at least until the Liverpool game this weekend, and that's really not what happened. You know, we dropped points to, ironically, the other teams that you and I cover, starting with your beloved,
yeah,
and Hove Albion Football Club.
Yeah, there was some interesting custody of Sean and Jude matches in those weeks.
Yeah, well, you lost yours.
I mean, neither of us came out very well from it, to be honest. No goals, no shots on target, but yeah, the Brighton one was very, very odd. I've chatted to a few mates from Brighton about the game just in the aftermath. And we were all in agreement that Bissouma basically did a job on Kane. I think Mwepu was playing in that game as well, and he played really well.
Mwepu did well until about the 40th minute when he probably could have got sent off.
That was the thing. Yeah,
and then he got hooked and it kind of reset what Brighton needed.
Yeah, so he was really good in there. And then we fell victim to the Trossard left wing back curse, which got Arsenal as well, I think. That was a really disappointing one. That was a no shots on target game, wasn't it? When nothing was going right. There was no creative spark there. Nothing from wide areas, really.
It was just really flat. I couldn't really. Do you know what? I think it was one of those where you could tell it was going to come because everyone in the day leading up to it, because it was a really hot day, I remember, really sunny. it was the first, you get like games either in August or in May where everyone wears like the actual club shirt to the game rather than like legs or whatever. And so in this case, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium was just a sea of white Spurs shirts. And you're like, it's great, we'll go have beers on the concourse before the match, we'll go beers after, you know. It's going to be great. Spurs lost? Okay, cool. It wasn't so great there. Did it feel like the same way that Brighton did Arsenal the week before? Because that seems like a long time ago as well, but I do remember, you know, towards the end of the game, Brighton fans were singing North London.
Yeah, I think their game against Arsenal, they were generally a lot more progressive with the ball and they created more chances, because that goal that Brighton scored at the end of the Spurs game, I think that was one of the few they had. And in that Arsenal game, they were just, not to needlessly slag off Arsenal, but they were cutting them open pretty regularly from what I remember and what I saw.
Yeah.
So they were different games, obviously. Arsenal are probably a bit more expansive in their playing style than Spurs are. Spurs just try and go wide and get the ball in and get the ball to the main players and all that jazz. Brighton have just, they put that 6-game losing streak behind them and started to play quite well, which was frustrating for us because obviously at that time Spurs were smashing teams all over the shop. Arsenal were losing games. It looked like top four was going in one way.
Yeah.
And then we got the Brentford game, which was you were at that one, weren't you?
I was. Yeah. Not a classic.
Not a classic, but there were some nice little subplots in there as well, weren't there?
Yeah. Well, I like that they mainly revolve around me, but you know, there was a football match going on as well. So I guess we'll talk about that instead.
Yes, we will. I mean, like, from being at the game, were there any Spurs players who stood out in particular? Or
I thought Romero was good at having to clean up a lot of the nonsense that we were creating for ourselves. I think that on set pieces, he was a bit, not necessarily like a liability, but you could tell that he's not a tall, aerial commander.
Yeah,
defender.
He's not that kind of defender, is he?
And then Tony was being left unmarked on every single corner and free kick. It was just like, why? this guy is obviously the biggest threat.
Yeah.
Why is he the one being left alone? He hit the bar twice. And probably in another world, Mbeumo probably scores the rebound with the 90th minute chance as well. And I thought apart from that, it's kind of what I expected from that game, because Brentford, one of their, it's like Brighton, their strengths are they stay competitive a lot. I think the Brentford game with Man United was probably an anomaly in their season. But every other game of the season, they've always kind of hung around, stuck around, and just kind of wait for the right time to make their, to hit their blows, really. And I thought they did a really good job of nullifying Spurs. Like, I can't, I think the best spell Spurs had was about 15 minutes at the start of the first half, and it was like, even then, it didn't yield any shots on target. It was Brentford got bodies behind the ball, there was a lot of block shots, it was a lot of stifling Spurs when they needed to. And then I guess apart from that, Christian Eriksen had a really good game.
Yeah,
but I think we've come to expect that from him already this season, because he's the best player in that team.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. Yeah. I guess the concerning thing about those two games is that there is now quite an obvious blueprint into how to stop this Conte Spurs team. If you just keep things really, really compact, you don't let Kane see as much of the ball as possible, and you stay nice and resistant to any counter-attacks. Thankfully, I think the games that we've got to play aren't really going to follow that mould anymore. I can see Arsenal coming to Spurs and sitting quite low, and maybe trying to hit on the break, but like Liverpool won't do that. I suppose Burnley will. Burnley absolutely will.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, and then Norwich last game of the season. Like, if they, regardless of what position they're in, if they don't go there and win, it'd be an absolute disgrace. Yeah.
Don't need any real insightful takes on that Norwich game. Yeah, whatever. Okay, so I think we've delved enough into.
Yeah, our timeline's all over the show. Where are we going?
Yeah, what are we doing? Anyway, we actually did win the game this weekend, so let's maybe talk about that.
Yes.
Didn't actually start that well, did it? I mean, because I was there covering it, and it did feel in the first 20 minutes that there was a lot of pent up frustration. That Spurs were making a lot of silly errors, largely of Ben Davis is doing, but you know, didn't actually do tangible harm in the end, so I guess that's fine in the end.
It contributed to quite a bad atmosphere in the first game.
But I do think the ironic thing is, it's fine because we didn't concede. If we did concede, I think that could have gone really, really sour. I think we could have lost by 2 or 3. But what it did was, it lifted, because I was sitting next to someone in the press box, and he was saying to me, the crowd, it feels like the crowd needs something to lift them, and it usually that's a goal. In this case, it was everyone deciding to abuse John Moss, the referee. I think I kind of like sparked something in Spurs to really.
It took us a while to get a foul in that game.
I think Moss probably realised that, like, they're still getting every single 50-50.
Yeah, it was
the fouls or the tackles, like, it doesn't really matter. They're still getting everything, and so you could feel the frustration. But you've got the stats up
from here. What time is this? This is like, when's that? That's the 20th minute, 18th minute.
So before the goal.
Yeah, before the goal, 6 fouls committed by Spurs and none by Leicester, which is quite. This is quite odd, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't really feel like that's an exact science, really.
Yeah,
not really.
But that was a sort of game which really could have been annoying and a bit nuggety.
Yeah,
until we got the most basic goal. Like, we talk about Son and Kane link up, like, and all the immense assists that they provide for each other. This one was just a knock into the box, and just an easy header from a corner.
I don't know what the exact stats, but I'm sure Leicester are like the worst team defending set pieces this season. Like, every time I watch them on Sky or BT and they're defending a corner, it comes up with a stat. It's like, the worst team's defending set pieces, and Leicester out in front by like 5 or 6 goals. It's like ridiculous. So I think for us, like, we're not. I don't think we've ever been amazing at set pieces. So,
not for a while.
We've been okay. I think we scored against Newcastle recently. Davis scored a header, didn't he?
Yeah.
That was like second ball from a corner.
Yeah, second ball.
So I guess that helps, I guess. But we're not overly amazing.
They're quite handy. Yeah, I suppose they're quite a big team, but they don't have any major aerial threats, do they? They're all sort of like 6 foot and unlike a Virgil van Dijk towering sort of presence.
And as someone who, like we said earlier, intensely has been covering Brentford this season, who do rely on set pieces, who look to get every margin set piece, and troubled us with set pieces.
Yeah.
you do wonder if there's we're missing something there. So no, nice score from a set piece, you know.
Very, very nice. Very, very nice. And then it took us a little while to get the second one, didn't it? I mean, I suppose we can touch on Lucas Moura being given a start for that first hour.
I don't think we should. I think I wasn't incensed by the call to drop Kulusevski, because I did think he wasn't, like, I don't think anyone's really impressive in those two games.
Mm.
But if you're going to make a change, I guess Kulusevski is probably the one to come out if you're going to stick with the 3-4-3, sorry.
Yeah, he'd be the more obvious
switch. It's not Son and it's not Kane. So
yeah.
Kulusevski has to come out. Put Lucas in. Lucas has a lot of backers. I know my dad in particular is like the chairman of the Lucas fan club. I asked Thomas Frank before the Brentford game, actually, and he asked about Kulusevski, and he went and said, "Oh, big fan of Lucas Moura." And I was like, so I don't know, maybe it's for people of the age of 40 or something, maybe they really like Lucas more than the young ones, but whatever. Did not look like his normal self, and I don't mean that in the sense of, because you know he's always a bit wasteful, he's always a bit like, you know, he's a flair player, he's going to give the ball away. He just looked like he lacked a lot of confidence though, and that's not usually like him, because he is the irrational confidence guy who thinks he's the best player in the world, and he did not look like he thought he was the best player in the world in this game.
Yeah, he just didn't look sure of himself at any point, did he really? And there were a few occasions when he was sort of unaware of what was around him and the ball got nicked off his toes. And then in that first hour, when you had like Kane, who was being a bit sloppy with the ball as well, suddenly a lot of sort of our avenues to goal weren't really providing us with anything going forward. So Lucas was a bit disappointing, and I don't think he'll be getting a start anytime soon.
Yeah,
now.
Because we had the perfect replacement for him, and the man who's going to take his starting spot back came on and made an immediate impact. Dejan Kulusevski.
That guy is he's an absolute nonsense of a footballer. It's ridiculous.
I've got
the stats up here now.
Yeah, read out the stats.
Yeah, so 14 Premier League appearances, 3 goals. I guess it's probably been a while since he scored, hasn't it? So you'd maybe like him to...
It feels like he scored more.
It does.
I guess it's because he's contributing so much that we've just been so impressed by his performances that,
and he's into that front three.
Yeah,
so sort of thing.
I think we'll get into this later, but it does feel like the same with Luis Diaz at Liverpool. Like, he's not contributing loads of goals, but it feels like he is because he's playing so well.
Yeah, and he's just gelled into the system so
yes.
quickly.
Yeah.
So 3 goals, 14 Premier League appearances, and 8 assists, 2 of which came on Sunday against Leicester. And that first one, very, very nice. It was just it was more sort of about composure and sort of he seemed to sort of wait for Leicester's defence to sort of move itself around a little bit, really. And Son displayed some really nice movement as well, but Kulusevski just managed to hold on to the ball for a little bit and found Son for a really, really nice finish. Lovely turn as well. Lovely turn.
I think it's one of those ones where if that happens in the first 10 minutes of the game, it feels like he scuffs it because he's not quite got it.
Mm.
He's not got a feel of the game yet. Like, I think that's the thing with Son aging. Like I said it before, he's not physically as quick or as imposing anymore. It does feel like that's one of the part. Like, his first touch is a little bit off. Little.
He's just a forward now. He's a central forward.
Yeah,
he's not going
to
be out.
And we'll get to him. But I tweeted the other day. I didn't even think that when we signed Kulusevski in January, that this is even what the best case scenario of him would have looked like.
Mm.
That I just, like, the video's been doing the rounds of him just toying with Luke Thomas on the right hand side and playing a great ball to Højbjerg as Luke Thomas commits the most cynical foul ever.
That was pretty poor, wasn't it?
I wasn't happy with that, sure. Yeah, I think if that's a player with a reputation, then you may be looking at something harsher.
Yeah.
But
I saw someone say Højbjerg was wearing Dr. Martens and tried to control that.
It was annoying because I felt for him because I thought he actually had a really good game, and then he goes and does something like that, and that's the thing that people remember.
Yeah, I suppose it's not really. If he's going to score, it'll be like arriving on the end of something rather than
scored a couple of bangers for us, hasn't he?
There was that one against Liverpool.
Wolves, I think, where the ball rebounds on the edge of the area.
He got that
round
one as well.
Last year, I think, actually.
Yeah, decent little goal threat. Nothing major.
But Kulusevski just completely changed the game for me. Like, we just look so much more in control and more composed.
Yeah, he's just such a fluid player as well. Just interlinks with Son and Kane much better than Lucas has ever, really.
It feels like when Lucas is there, he's like the spare part. He's like,
I'm going to do my own thing
kind of player. Like, he's never. I'm trying to think. Like, apart from Emerson, who's obviously like his fellow Brazilian. I can't ever remember like Lucas being really kind of pally with someone. The only thing I can think of was when Gareth Bale came and he started doing like the El celebration.
Yeah, there was that.
It was like, that was really it. It's like,
there was him and Vinicius last year as well, wasn't there? Yeah, where they, that got played up. Connection again.
You don't ever see Lucas with Son or with Kane or whatever, the same way that those two with each other.
Yeah, they're not like cliquey, are they? I don't think.
I know, yeah, that's not, not saying that.
Maybe they've cottoned on to some of Lucas' politics and that's...
I was thinking maybe they clocked on to just the way that he plays, but...
I swear, this guy is playing against us. This guy is playing against us.
I guess we... So...
Should we leave the third goal for now?
Yeah.
And chat about our man Christian Romero.
I think we should,
because this fella has just been out of this world. I'd say especially the last few months, even in the games that we haven't played particularly well in, he's just been enormous. And just his appetite to go, I'm sure like seeing it in the flesh is something different than watching it on TV, isn't it? Because he does the challenges he puts in, they're not like, I'd say if he gets them like a split second wrong, he's probably in a bit of trouble.
Yeah.
But his timing is just always on point.
With the second goal, I mean, I can't remember what I was looking at it with the other day when they were saying, there's my cousin. And he was saying for the goal, oh, you know, Lucas needs to, not Lucas, Romero needs to be really careful because that's a really dangerous chance. I was like, he got the ball.
Yeah.
He got the ball. It wasn't late. It was nothing like. I don't know what it was like on the TV, but you didn't sense that it was a part of you coming. You could tell it was fine. It was really good, and I thought that was really kind of poetic that it just, that goal came from him doing an outrageous bit of defending, and then I was very, very close to writing a whole bit on about how he's like, he should be like the embodiment of new Spurs, so to say. Like,
yeah,
I think I talked a bit before about how we need to like move on from the Poch era, and that involves like, you know, not signing Eriksen, signing these new players, signing these players with Lorna, Bentancur, Kulusevski. Romero is definitely like that guy. He's so aggressive in a good way.
It's just a classic danger spotter, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got that license to go out and just crunch.
Just quick, just it's like the little like toe pokes, gets his foot in front of the hook around him.
Yeah.
Won't always come off, but it's in a way that he really kind of intimidates the striker. Like Daka, I think, started, it's a little bit dangerous. Like he was getting in some good positions, but from about the 10th minute onwards, I don't think he had a sniff. And I think that was the same with Antonio when West Ham came.
Yeah,
I think it was the same with Chris Wood when Newcastle came.
He's the guy for the battle, isn't he? Romero?
Yes,
he's the guy who goes up against any beefy striker and just says, right, we're having it out.
Yeah, I think he kept Tony under lock from open play, at least in the Brentford game. I think there's a lot of examples where he's doing basically all he can as a mere mortal to keep us in this. I think at the start of the season, I think Jamie Carragher might have said, like, I think he let the rubric he laid out was for Arsenal specifically, but I think it can translate to us as well, where you can't buy like these kind of project players. You need to buy the players who are good already but have the potential to make a leap, like the way that when Van Dijk and Mane went to Liverpool, they all of a sudden within like a year were like world class. And I think Romero definitely kind of fits that bracket work. I don't think I'm not saying he's going to get like team of the season or anything this season, but next season, if he wants to win like Spurs as player of the year, get team of the season, Spurs have a really good defensive record, I would not be shocked by that at all.
Yeah, could see that. I mean, there's always so much competition for those sort of awards, aren't there? Like, it's like this season, it's sort of de facto City and Liverpool. But I could definitely see something like that happening. And it's great having, I know we talk about his sort of physical prowess and that as well, but he's great on the ball.
Yeah.
Like, his little turns out of trouble, and he's very confident.
It's quite interesting because he doesn't always look necessarily comfortable. I'm trying to think of the comparison where someone like, they don't look like they're in total control, but they are. I think it's probably when Kane first came into the team. Like, he looked a bit clunky.
Yeah.
But
still does now.
I trusted him not to lose the ball. I trusted him that he was going to keep possession. I think the comparison thing about it is actually Wanyama, where it felt like every kind of ball he had was like bouncing and was bobbling along. And he was just kind of like, but he used his body so well to shield it. He used his feet so well to just keep it within his own like kind of little circle.
Yeah.
And I think that's really because I think for a long time, well, maybe for like a couple of years, but whatever, like the Mourinho era felt like forever. We did feel like we'd kind of lacked technical midfielders across the, technical players, sorry, across the pitch.
Yeah, this is true. Well, it was all one game plan, wasn't it, a few years ago? Just get the ball to a couple of players, and then, I mean, who I can't even remember who we would be playing in midfield then. It would be like Højbjerg and Sissoko. Yeah, Winks. I mean, that's going to be.
Dombele played for a little bit, which was nice back then.
Yeah, everyone's favourite, Gio Lo Celso.
Champions League semi-finalist, Gio Lo Celso.
Yeah, didn't make the final though, did he?
David, no.
I like it.
Yeah. 1 point from Sergio Aurier, just showing off their silver medal that was in the dressing room.
Yeah, that was fun. Sergio Aurier got an appearance last night, didn't he?
I was thinking, I said this on Twitter last night, how chaotic would a Foyth Romero centre back partnership have been?
Would have loved it. Would have loved it.
I mean, we might have conceded like 60 goals a season, but it would have been so good.
Juan Foyth would be starting at right wing back for us right now.
Dan Kilpatrick of this parish did tweet the other week. I think he hadn't tweeted about a few days, so it was quite a shock. It was like, I can't remember what the quote she was. It was like, name something that you miss, and it's like Sergio. And people were like, whoa, like, you can't say that.
I can't disagree with him, to be fair. He's obviously a massive liability, but I don't know what Emerson Royale is. So
I trust Conte to coach Aurier out of his bad habits, I think.
I think so. It'll be his way or the highway, I'm sure.
But he's at Villarreal, so let's talk about it.
Yeah. All right, mate.
Do you want to talk about Son now?
Yeah, let's talk about Son.
Do you want to talk about Son?
So he did that first goal.
What a player.
But yeah, what a player. That goal to just wrap up proceedings. 79th minute. Left-footed, which is, I know, very two-footed player.
Scored more weak-foot goals than strong-foot goals this season.
Yeah, I've definitely seen him come in off the right and curl one into the left. I think he's done it against Leicester before. Do you remember when we won like 2-0 at the King Power a few seasons ago? It might have been 18-19.
Yes, 18-19.
And he just shimmied inside and just smacked it with his left.
Yeah,
that was a great goal. But yeah, he's the man. He obviously got the assist for the first goal.
Yeah.
Two more goals there. He was an absolute FPL masterstroke for whoever had them.
On 90 Mil, we do FPL tips every week. And it feels like for weeks we've been saying, oh, you got to buy the dip on Kane and Son. They're not going to not score forever.
I actually played my wild card before the Brighton game, and I got Kulu, Son, and Kane in.
So it's your full call.
Yeah. I got two big blanks there. But then they obviously all did the business at the weekend. Anyway, an amazing strike. And I know you are firmly on the drum about this goal.
I am the Son truther and the non-peng golden boot.
So So how are those illustrious standings at the moment?
So Son has scored the most non-peng goals in the league this season. He's two clear of Salah.
Because those are all of his goals, aren't they?
Yes,
so he's got all 19 of them.
Yeah,
it's 19.
Yeah, 19 from open play. Kane has scored 11 open play goals, I think. I think that's it. I think he's only scored like 2 pens.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. But I just think that's such a more kind of replicable skill when you've got the open play. Like, I think, you know, you don't know how many goals, any penalties you're going to score in a season, whatever. But I think, I'm trying to think, like, does anything about his overall game look different to you? Because it does feel, because it felt like last season was really the leap. This season is just more of a continuation of that, because it's a better team than it was last season.
I think that definitely plays into it. I think he was always due a season where he did explode a bit more, because he still hasn't hit the 20 goal mark in the Prem. I'm sure he will do it this season.
Touch wood.
But yeah. In terms of actual differences, I'm not sure really. I mean, it does seem that there's just a more of a focus of him staying infield, him not being that, because, you know, under Poch, if he, you know, when we played at Wembley, he'd just be like hugging the touchline or like coming infield every now and again.
I'm not convinced Poch ever really loved him like that.
I don't think
until the end, at least, like in I think the Champions League run was when Son was getting the win like every game. It was like, okay, now I can actually trust this guy. Before that, you know, he was getting shifted to the left wing back in like the FA Cup semi-final. He was the one that, if we went for to 3-4-3 like against Real Madrid, he would be the one to get dropped. Like, he wasn't ever that guy under Poch. It was really, maybe it's like part of the Mourinho plan when he realised Eriksen was going to leave and Dele Alli wasn't what it used to be. That, okay, I got to funnel more into this guy who's really quick. He's two-footed. His finishing is... I remember a stat, actually. I wouldn't tweet this because I couldn't find the actual official one. So okay. I'm not a spreader of misinformation, Jude. You know me.
Sounds like fake news to me.
You know me, Jude. You know me. I don't deal in if buts and maybes. I deal in absolutes.
Being serious.
I remember. So the app Understat, I think they said that Son is overperforming his XG by 100 million goals. Not the exact thing, but thereabouts.
That might be fake news. You might get some hate mail.
Excuse news.
Excuse
But yeah, so basically they were saying was the only person who comes close to that is Messi in like the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. But Messi's total is like half of what Son's was. So Son is like the best finisher in terms of goals that you probably shouldn't score from where he takes shots.
Yeah.
In the last 5 years, and it's like,
I mean, that's been easy to see, hasn't it? How cold he is in front of goal now.
Yeah.
Like, I think first few seasons, obviously, you're still discovering a new player. You're wondering how they're going to sell.
When they go through on goal,
yeah. you don't really know.
And you know, like the first thing that came to my mind was, you remember when we played Monaco away, 16-17, mm-hmm. and there's the image of him running, he's one-on-one,
mm.
and then like 2 seconds later, he's running out of the 18-yard box himself, but the only person who's touched the ball in that time was him. And it's like, it's just completely different now. He's got, like, you're right, in the 1v1 situation, he's very Kane-like, he's going to strike the ball so cleanly, it's going to hit the net, and the net's going to make a ping sound because it's been hit so well.
Yeah.
And then when he's away from the box, you can't let him on either foot.
He's got such a wide array of threats, hasn't he? Like, when he does run through, I think he did that against Villa and then West Ham, you're pretty confident he's going to put them away.
Yeah.
If the team is silly enough to give him a little bit of space on the edge of the box, like Leicester were at the weekend, he'll smash him in top corner. He's just like, it's hard to put into words just what a fantastic player he is. And it's an odd one, isn't it? Because I think at points we might have been just mislabeling him as a purple patch player, and
you know how much
a
street,
I know,
how much
I,
hate
know
that.
I know you
know
do,
how much, you know how much
and I think
that.
We, to be fair, I think we were all probably in that
at some point
mindset
level.
At
yeah.
some point, but like you do have to sort of realize that at some point that this is just a fantastic player, and we're almost lucky to see him play for Spurs, and that he seems to genuinely love the club.
Snuck onto the club's top 10 all-time goalscorers list recently.
Yeah,
because I was thinking of this as an angle for an article. Like, he's probably more of a Spurs legend now than Eriksen and Ali were, because he's stuck around because he's committed to the future, and he's peaked again after they've left in this new era, like with Poch and then after Poch as well. It does feel like he's going to be remembered quite fondly, and I'm really happy about that because
absolutely.
You know, I like seeing players get their flowers when they deserve them.
Yeah, and when those sort of goal records come up, it's probably just because Harry Kane's a little
yeah,
bit ahead
the,
of him.
Yeah, it's the thing,
and
yeah.
it's just seen as the main guy that he doesn't get the credit he deserves.
I think he's only 3 goals behind Salah in the race for the Golden Boot. I don't think he gets there because I just imagine Salah's going to bag a few in his last 3 games, and it's going to be hard for Son to really kind of leapfrog that, unless he has, like, you know, when Kane ended the 16-17 season, he scored like 7 goals.
What, Hull and Leicester?
Yeah.
The whole game was hilarious. Was the only subplot in that game. I remember being like, "Oh, Kane might get golden boot, but
he might piss off Alexis and Lukaku."
Yeah, and then we were like 4-0 up in 20 minutes.
Yeah. I remember the other subplot of that game was we lost Hugo Lloris the Golden Glove because he did a really dumb goal, and he got really fuming. He was like looking around.
Who scored for Hull? I felt like it might have been Robertson or Klukas or someone.
You look it up, you do the important research.
the glory is Tottenham 7 hole 1. Everyone scored, like Ben Davis scored. Wanyama, Alderweireld.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, Sam Klukas. Do you remember Sam Klukas?
Sam Klukas,
he was the guy who got into trouble for doing some sort of 4chan signal.
Oh, was that him?
Yeah, that was that dude. Yeah, that was weird.
How did we get to talk about this?
I haven't talked about Sam Klukas in years. So strange. Okay, that's probably enough Leicester done, isn't it? I reckon.
I think so. I think we've got to come on to the big one.
Yeah.
I think we can't leave this pod without talking about the Liverpool game.
We can't put it off any longer. What a horrible fixture it is, Sean.
It is. So
good lord.
So I did an article about why this is so important, not just in terms of our season, but in terms of Conte necessarily staying. Because I think if you can go to Midnight Nightmare, please do, because it really, you know, I have a family feed to feed. Got to get that ad revenue. But it was basically like, if we win here, then it feels like it's in such the circumstances that we haven't won at Anfield and Yonkers, that Liverpool are going for a quadruple, that it does feel like maybe we are ready to make a leap next season. Mm-hmm. I compared it to when, do you remember when Liverpool beat Man City 4-3 in 17-18?
Yeah.
And it ended Man City's unbeaten run. Mm-hmm. I think they were going for the Invincibles and the Centurions at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like, oh, Liverpool, they might, you know, they've got Van Dijk now, maybe they're going to be more than just disruptors, maybe they're going to be contenders soon.
Mm-hmm.
I do, there have been times this season, like we've been really inconsistent at times, but when we've hit our heights, well, our peaks have looked probably higher than Chelsea's, I would say. I'm extremely biased, but I think when we've Tottenham at their best are better than Chelsea at their best,
style of football wise, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's not what Chelsea are.
Yeah, Chelsea just aren't like that.
They just suck the way
the way that we can kill teams is insane. And the thing that we've seen the second half of the season, I haven't seen since that 16-17 season, like I said, when we scored 86 goals and conceded 26.
Yeah,
which is unbelievable when you think about that. But this is a massive mental hurdle to overcome, because four seasons in a row we've gone to Anfield. We could / should have won. I think so. Let's go through.
I think
we need some therapy. We need to go through.
Well, all right.
We'll start with the first one, because that's actually the kindest. Because actually,
which one's the first one?
17-18. When we drew 2-2, the Wanyama Thunderbolt equaliser.
Oh, that was brilliant!
Unbelievable. God.
Yeah, that. I suppose I get the should have won narrative from that one. But you know what? Like, that was also just such a sick game as well.
I enjoyed the
fallout was great.
The fallout was so good. And it didn't. I think the thing that I always come back to is that it didn't actually impact our season. Like,
yeah,
if we'd won, we still would have come third. Yeah, and it didn't really matter. Like, as far, if Liverpool came above us, then maybe I'd have been a bit annoyed.
Did that start the whole aggro towards Harry Kane? That game?
I think so.
That game must have come the Stoke one relatively soon.
It was about a month after or something. Man. Yeah, yeah.
Definitely got.
Because he draws contact for the first pen, which he misses. Salah goes down the other end, scores a really great goal, like just weaves his way between Davis and Vertonghen. We go down the other end, Van Dijk boots Lamela in the leg. Liverpool fans can't live with the fact that he did actually boot him in the leg and it wasn't him diving.
This is the one I never understand.
There's one angle where it looks like he doesn't brush him, but it's only because of the perspective of it.
Yeah.
Every single other angle, Van Dijk has booted him. that was the most enjoyable one. Then in 18-19 we actually snuck it to 1-1. I wasn't expecting anything, but we got to 1-1. I think Lucas scored in like the 70th minute or something to equalise.
Yeah.
And then the famous clip of Sissoko running through on goal. He has a choice. Can he play it to, I think it was Son running with him, but Van Dijk's marked him out of the game really well. Van Dijk knows that if Sissoko takes a shot with his left foot, he's not going to score. Lo and behold, he blasts it over.
Oh,
and then Liverpool going on the other end, it just rolls in off Alderweireld's shin or whatever.
Yeah, it was a dodgy own goal.
I just remember like falling to my knees and being like, I can't believe that's happened. I really can't believe that's happened.
That one was terrible.
1920, Kane scored after about 20 seconds.
Yeah, I actually wasn't. I didn't watch this game.
I didn't watch
actually,
it.
I was in Rome watching Roma AC Milan.
And I was at Arsenal versus Palace when Xhaka blew up.
Oh yeah, the whole
I remember going into that game just not. I thought it was the end of the Poch era, and I just wasn't that asked about it. So, but I remember like when they went 1-0, I was like, "You can't give me hope. You can't do that. You can't just do that."
That was an odd sort of goal as well, wasn't it?
It was.
It was just a header or a tap in.
And then we had a couple of really good chances to kill the game.
That was the Gazzaniga game, wasn't it?
Yeah. Congrats to Kapala Gazzaniga getting promoted with Fulham as their second choice goalkeeper, by the way.
And Joshua,
if he's listening, and Joshua, I'm sure you have any fans of the podcast.
He's absolutely listening.
And then last season, when it felt like a real kind of sliding doors moment for the Mourinho era, we came into it off the back of the Arsenal win, and it was like if we can go to Liverpool and win, because I think it was the bit between Liverpool's resurgence and them falling off a cliff.
Yeah,
and it was like if Spurs can go and win, that's a real kind of statement, and we went. Did we go one down?
We went one down. Yeah.
Son equalised.
Son equalised pretty
quickly. But
then
Bergwijn had two chances to score. Mourinho digs him out after the game for it. And Firmino scores from a corner in the last minute. It's just like, it's happened again.
Yeah, and then it all did turn to pot, didn't it?
Yeah,
from that position, there was absolutely no need to go and finish seventh, IMO.
No, probably not.
Probably not.
We went on a really bad run off that, so.
Yeah, and that was sort of curtains for Mourinho.
So yeah, it does feel like there's a lot of...
But in terms of this weekend, I'd say it's more set up for a Conte than a Poch or Mourinho, really.
I agree.
Just because... You can go to Anfield and you can like shut the door or try to shut the door like Mourinho does, but Conte, I think, without wanting to, you know, lick his nether regions too bad, will have some plans up his sleeve, and he's shown that against and this group of players as well,
yeah,
against more explosive teams like Manchester City, they can go and do damage. And what you know how Liverpool play, like they're just
and we played really well in the game at.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I'm really annoyed we didn't win that game.
Yeah,
I thought we should have won.
What? Yeah, they had a player sent off, didn't they? Robertson got sent off.
I guess the counter to that is Kane probably should have been sent off.
Kane should have been sent off.
But we played the tempo, the intensity we played at, and I put this in the article I wrote. It made me fully believe that Dele and Ndombele had futures in. I thought they were very good. I thought Dele was quite wasteful, but it was like. You can see him. He's made for this third man runner role in a 3-5-2. I thought it was perfect. Ndombele got the assist, but then kind of tailed off a bit. But it was like you can still see the promise is there. But
that was a nice game actually. Really, just because I mean, obviously it was a very very entertaining one. But you did sort of feel like you get those games under new managers where you think, okay, well, it's sort of come into place now.
Yeah.
And they gave Liverpool, you know, going for the title or quadruple or whatever.
Yeah.
A really really tough game and a game where they looked uncomfortable for like. Large chunks of it.
And we haven't played in a while because that was right in the middle of our COVID outbreak where like everyone in the team got it.
That was weird. Yeah, that was a good 2 weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I thought
we were going to be really rusty in that. I think Liverpool had a couple of COVID absentees on the date, but I think they were largely unaffected by such an outbreak, whereas we had hardly trained. I think I remember this was famous for, it was the first time Højbjerg didn't start for us in
since
he signed.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's got to be really kind of feeling the effects of that for him to not start. And I think Son scored a game, but I think he looked the same. He was one that I think really suffered from COVID.
Yeah.
So for us to have produced that performance, that made me really have belief that we do something. And it's making, I'm really annoyed because now I was kind of settling back into living with Arsenal getting top four after the West Ham game. Now I've kind of talked myself into, you know what, Spurs, if anyone's going to go to Liverpool and beat them, it would be us because we have the setup to do it. I think we have the players to do it. Yes. I think there's a lot of nice little subplots which fall into our favour a little bit.
Yeah, you do wonder if maybe we can, if this is a good time, if there's any to catch Liverpool. Just they've got their FA Cup final booked in the Champions League final. Obviously, you'd think that there'd be a little bit of rotation, even though their squad's so massive and they've got quality players all over the pitch. But maybe it would be one that we can just catch them a little cold.
Yes.
Just on those breaks, if you've got Son running at Alexander-Arnold, for example, getting into like the space he can leave, there will be opportunities for Spurs, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It will just be, hopefully it's just not long ball punted forward because, you know, like, and it's so weird with Liverpool because whenever they defend a break, like Van Dijk, Matip at the back, you don't see them losing a one-on-one duel, do you? Annoyingly. Because they're so good. But they are so good. They're so good.
Yeah, so good.
But yeah, it should be a fascinating game. And like, it's one I try not to hype up too much beforehand just because we all know the inevitable. Yeah. But like in the moment, when those chances do come, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
And you know, why not?
We'll get some chances. We'll get some chances. It's just a matter of taking them. We do look more clinical now than we have in a long time.
Yeah, and like I know they've got to go to Liverpool and win, but if they don't, it won't be because of that game that they've missed out on top four.
Yeah,
because of Wolves, Southampton, Brighton, Brentford. There are other games that they should have done better.
Yeah, these little patchy runs where it's just like, okay, why did you do that?
Why did you do that?
Funny.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Got anything else to add, mate?
I think I have little to add. I mean, injury, quartet is still Doherty, Reggie, and Tanganga, and Skip, yeah. isn't it? Not getting any Skip.
I guess Skip signed a contract in the last couple of weeks.
He did, yeah, which that was nice. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deserved that. Hopefully, when he comes back, he's not crocked like all the other DMs that got injured for mysterious reasons in the last few years and came back and were all of a sudden really shit. But, you know, I'm hopeful.
Yeah, cheers for bringing that curse up, mate.
Someone's got to do it.
That's good. That's the good work that we've got to do. Okay, cool. Well, we can probably leave it there, can't we?
Nice place to leave it then. Thank you for listening. And again, sorry we haven't been able to put these out more regularly. But
I'm not sorry, Sean.
All right. Jude's not sorry. I'm sorry, at least. I'm sorry. Yeah, we'll try and keep going for the rest of the season, at least. Because everyone needs a bit of de-stressing from Spurs in their life, don't they?
They do.
They do.
They do.
I know I do. Anyway, thank you for listening. If you haven't subscribed, please do so and leave a review. It really means lots to us, and we'll see you next time.